Legislative Budget and Audit Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, December 14th, 2022. The time is 1:03 p.m. Please silence your cell phones. This is Chair Natasha von Imhoff in the Anchorage LIO Denali Conference Room. And we have the following members present in the room. We have Senator Bishop. We have Representative Neil Foster. We have Senator Stedman, myself, von Imhoff, and Representative Sponholz. On the phone, we have Representative Ortiz, Senator Keel, and Senator Reinbold. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. We do have a quorum to do business. Okay. Before we dive into today's business, I do have one change to the agenda. Representative Calvin Schrage will not be bringing forward the procurement request for an updated district cost factor study. So is there any objection to striking the agenda item 4B, as in boy? Okay, seeing none, the agenda is approved as modified. So our first item on the agenda today is the approval of minutes. Senator Stedman, I have a motion to approve the minutes.
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the minutes from the following meetings as presented. September 28, 2022, November 2nd, 2022.
Is there any objection to approving the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved as presented. I do see that Representative Tuck is on the phone with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Our next order of business are the RPLs submitted to this committee by the administration on November 30th. We have Alexi Painter, legislative fiscal analyst, is here with us in person and will brief the committee on the RPLs. And we have, let me see here, we have Paloma Harbor with the Office of Management and Budget on the phone. To help us to be able to answer any questions, as well as Hannah Lager, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and finally Marie Marks with the Legislative Legal Services. So, Mr. Painter, thank you, and proceed when you are ready.
Thank you. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Fiscal Analyst. So you have before you two RPLs today, RPL 08-2023-1 0175 and RPL 08-2023-0194. And to refresh the committee's memory, on November 2nd, the governor submitted a number of RPLs to the committee dealing with a similar item to these. It was in the Department of Commerce for the USDA Seafood Processors Pandemic Response Safety Block Grant Program. The committee approved one RPL for this item for $10 million. The governor is now submitting two other RPLs for the same source of funding, affecting different appropriation items. So for both of these agencies, DCCED, the appropriation for 0-0175 is the commissioner's office, and for the other one is investments. The one that was approved last month was in the Community and Regional Affairs Appropriation. So, again, kind of going back in to refresh the committee's memory, the LBNA language, it's called the RPL language, in the operating bill this year included a limitation that said that RPLs or appropriations may not be increased under the RPL statute by more than $1 million. And so the single RPL that was already approved increased the Community and Regional Affairs Appropriation by $10 million. So before the committee, I suppose there's a couple of questions for the committee to consider. One would be whether an RPL for in any location for the same source of funding, this USDA block grant, would be appropriate. One argument could be that the legislature put in this $10 million limit. No matter where you put it, you're trying to get around that limit. And that could be seen as problematic. On the other hand, these RPLs are not increasing the same appropriation item. And that language specifically references increasing an appropriation item by more than $10 million may not happen. These are increasing other appropriations. And so from that sense, you know, it does not plainly violate the tax. So it's different than the submissions last time, which one of them is in the same appropriation as the other one. That was clearly problematic. In this case, there's this question of, you know, is any RPL for this purpose okay? Are you just trying to get around the $10 million? Is that a legal concern or just a policy concern? I think you make your different, there may be different points of view on that. I can't really weigh in. That's a policy question. And then the other question is, setting that aside, whether you could do this at all, are these appropriate places to put this RPL in the first place? And I think that's where I would talk about these two a little differently. So item 0175 in the commissioner's office, the commissioner's office is a place that the legislature has historically appropriated grant funds, including in the FY23 budget that we're increasing. The legislature approved an increment of general funds for a small business grant program in the commissioner's office. That indicates that the commissioner's office appropriation is a place that, you know, that includes grant funds to businesses and that this would be an appropriate place. On the other hand, there's no federal authority in the commissioner's office. I think some have argued in the RPL process that you can't increase appropriation through $0 of federal authority. You can't increase it to $10 million. Others have argued that it's the item that you're increasing, not a particular fund source, and so it would be acceptable. Again, that's a legal debate. I'm not an attorney. I'm not here to have that debate. But I think overall, the commissioner's office location would make sense as a place to put grant funds. That's within the existing purpose of that the legislature had intended with the commissioner's office appropriation, as seen by the fact that we put a grant program to small businesses there. The other RPL, 0194, is in the Division of Investment. That division is a little bit different. It does occasionally administer grant funds and does other financial services for CP processors, namely for revolving loan programs. And the department as a whole has grant authority. However, it's not typical to have grant funds directly in this appropriation versus using it as just a place that would take an RSA and help with administration. And again, there's no federal funds. This division is completely supported by revolving loan proceeds. So if you're taking this argument of you have to have that appropriation to expand it, then this location would be more questionable. But that said, again, you know, there's an argument for this being an appropriate place that would be based on the fact that they do existing work with seafood processors and helping administer grant funds, even if that's not a place we've appropriated them for. So I suppose I've kind of given some ambiguities here. But I suppose I would separate the two questions the committee has to consider as, do you think an RPL for above the $10 million in any place is appropriate? And are these locations appropriate? And maybe consider those a little separately. But I guess that's all my prepared comments. I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them.
So thank you, Mr. Painter. One thing that I would like the committee to know, and I just want to confirm, I believe Paloma Harbor with OMB has a slide deck, a handful of slides that she would like to present to the committee on this subject. So unless there's any specific questions that committee members like to ask Mr. Painter. No. Okay, Senator Sedman.
Just want to clear, so from your perspective of legislative finance, you're comfortable with moving both of these forward, is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Sedman, I guess I would say it's a policy call for the committee to make. I think there's arguments that can be made why these are appropriate, and there's arguments that can be made why they're not, and that's a policy call to make those arguments. I can just present the evidence and leave it to you to make the decision.
So the quick question that I have is, and real quickly, we have Representative Andy Josephson online too, so thank you, Representative Josephson. So as soon as it looks like we are getting the presentation, and I believe everyone has a paper copy as well in front of you, so you have it here, just FYI. Mr. Painter,
Madam Chair,
the $10 million limit not been in place, would we have simply just seen a $30 million RPL sometime this fall?
Chair Vandenhove, yes. That's in fact what the committee had approved last year was a $30 million RPL in community and regional affairs appropriation in the fiscal year 22 budget. The funding was not able to be sent out during fiscal year 22, so that authority lapsed, and they need it again in FY23, where we do have this $10 million limit, and that's why it had to be split up, or why they tried to split it up to submit it again. Otherwise, what happened last year in community and regional affairs in one place was appropriate at that time.
Okay, so just to repeat what we just heard, was this committee approved the $30 million a year ago for fiscal year 22 in one location in community and regional affairs. And for a variety of reasons, the money was not allocated to its recipients. So here we are in fiscal year 2023. The feds have still allowed this money to go through. It's still the same pot of money just a year later, correct? It's not new money. So we're just being faced with the same decision, but with this cap, if you will. Mr. Painter, do you know when are the feds going to get set up with this and pull the money? Do you know?
I'm sure I do not know. The department may have insight into the timing.
Okay, we will certainly ask the department. All right, well, I see that we have a paper copy in front of us, and we have it electronically, so...
Madam Chair.
Harbor, whenever you're ready, please state your name for the record and please go through your presentation.
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear. So who is this?
This is Representative Tuck. Can we have those emailed to us so we can follow? For those of us that called in, we can follow it.
It's posted on BASIS, but I'm seeing my staff row saying absolutely.
Thank you, because I'm not near a computer, but I can check my email from here.
Okay. All right. So, Paloma, whenever you're ready. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Paloma Harbor, and I am a fiscal management analyst with the Office of Management and Budget. Director Steininger is sorry that he cannot be here today to talk to you. Thank you, Chair Von Imhoff and committee, for the opportunity to present to you on these revised RPLs provide you with a presentation. I appreciate your indulgence. If we could go to slide 2.
Okay.
So this subject is not new to you. There was quite a bit of discussion on it at your last meeting. And after that meeting, the Office of Management and Budget and the Department of Commerce worked to identify a legal path forward to ensure that the remaining $20 million in federal relief funding could go out to impacted seafood processors as soon as possible. The RPLs that we have provided to the committee do exactly that. So if we could go to slide 3, please.
Okay, we're moving to slide 3.
Okay, this slide simply highlights the appropriation items in the current year's budget bill that are subject to the RPLs that were submitted and that we are asking to legally increase. If we could go to slide 4.
Slide 4.
Thank you. This slide provides references to the RPL statute and to the appropriation bill language that restricted that RPL process further. So I've highlighted 2 references in the statute and the bill, the reference to appropriation item and the reference to not specifically appropriated. So the statutory if you'd like, I could read it. The RPL language specifically says the increase of an appropriation item based on additional federal or other program receipts not specifically appropriated by the full legislature may be expended in accordance with the following procedures, and then it outlines the procedures to follow. So the statutory reference to not specifically appropriated should address some of the concerns highlighted by legislative finance on the RPL. The fact that there's not an existing grant in that organization that we're trying to increase, that language says it's okay if there's not a specific appropriation for that purpose in that appropriation item. So, sorry. The other reference to appropriation item is highlighted to help clarify both what we are increasing and what the restriction was placed on. The statute, I mean, the appropriation bill language is specific to an appropriation item. And as mentioned before, we've identified two separate appropriation items that we can increase each of by not more than $10,000. Slide five, please.
I believe that it's $10 million and not $10,000.
I'm sorry, $10 million. You're correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we're on slide five now.
Okay, so Commerce, as mentioned in the RPL analysis by Legislative Finance, Commerce has the statutory authority to distribute these grants. The state has identified two separate appropriation items that can each be increased by not more than $10 million. And this solution will result in the distribution of this federal relief funding to these impacted seafood processors this month. So that concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Do we have questions from committee members? Do we have questions from folks on the phone? Okay.
Yes,
so,
yes. Madam Chair, Candy Josephson,
yes.
Megan Wallace going to offer us her position on this?
Very good question. So the folks that we have on the phone right now is Marie Marks with Legislative Legal Service, and I think that's a good segue. I would like to invite Marie Marks to comment on the presentation and the RPLs, and then followed by, I see Hannah Lager standing by, and so I'll be calling on you here in a moment as well. But Ms. Marks, if you are on the phone, could you introduce yourself for the record and then provide your comments on these RPLs, please?
Yes, for the record, this is Marie Marks with Legislative Legal Services. And I really don't have too much to add. I think Megan Wallace addressed this at the last hearing, and I really don't have too much to add to her comments. But I will just point out, I think, that the question from you, Senator Von Imhoff, and answered by Alexi, really highlights the issue. Had the $10 million limit not been in place, we would be seeing one RPL for $30 million. And no matter where you try to place it, at the end of the day, I believe the intent here is to get around the limit that was enacted by the legislature in HB 281. And so looking at it in the circumstances that are here, not in a vacuum, but under the circumstances here, we still have the same legal concerns and legal issues. But again, I want to reiterate that our service is just to identify these issues, concerns. I agree with Mr. Painter. At the end of the day, the legislature, you know, makes the decision it needs to, and I think this really is a policy decision once the legislature has all the information that we provide and that all the other parties provide.
Thank you. Could you comment on the risk of either decision, a yes decision today of accepting the RPLs as presented, and then a no decision, and then the money doesn't get allocated, or what are the next steps? Do you feel, can you answer the risk analysis of the options before this committee?
Chair Von Imhoff, I will do my best. I don't think I can put a number on it, but I can say this. I do not think it's low risk. And that is because that legislative budget and audit has been sued before when it's approved in RPL. I know that litigation was resolved. It is ultimately resolved without addressing the LBNA's action. But it's because of that I can't say it's low risk. If the LBNA ultimately makes the policy decision to move forward with approval here, There are options. If LBNA does not wish to approve it, there are absolutely options. And I think Senator Stebbins had mentioned a couple of them at the last hearing, such as maybe a fast-tracked bill. The money can still be appropriated by the legislature when it comes and convenes in January. How fast that happens, I don't know. But there are definitely other options to get the money out, even though it may not be as quick as the people involved would like it to be.
So thank you.
Madam Chair.
Well, hold on. We're gonna get two folks here in the room, and then I'll go to the phone. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so we've got Senator Stebbins followed by Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On this item, my understanding is that this money doesn't expire for about a year. So if we go ahead and pass these RPLs and there is litigation, we're going to be convened by the time, I would imagine, the litigation is pretty much filed. And we can rectify that in the budget process. So I'm not so sure that the risk level is super high. We could also take no action and just put it in the supplemental appropriation bill coming at us in January, February, March. And who knows when that'll pass, that might be clear in May. But looks to me like best course of proceeding is to go ahead and pass these to RPLs. And then if there's a problem, we'll deal with the budget. And also in the budget, we could put blessing language in it also to make it absolutely clear that the legislature was fine with this action. Is there an option?
So thank you. Before you answer, the question that I see here, Ms. Marks, is if the LDNA committee passes these two RPLs and then convenes next month in the middle of January and begins the budget work, and it takes 3 or 4 months to ultimately pass the budget, which I assume this could potentially be part of if we needed to, with blessing language, what's the risk between today, December 14th, and the 121st day sometime in May?
Yes, again, for the record, Bree Marks with Legislative Legal Services, Chair Von Imhoff, Senator Stedman. The risk is that gap of time between when the LDNA committee takes action and the legislature is able to convene, to get together as a body and either ratify the language or appropriate the money. And so whatever that gap of time is where the risk would remain. It may be that a court case doesn't move that fast and the legislature is able to ratify it, which is what happened in the last case, is the legislature was able to move fast enough and ratified it, thus essentially making the issue moot in the court. But to the extent that the legislature isn't able to act that quickly, if the court addresses the issue before the legislature ratifies it, that's, I think, where you'd be leaving yourself open to the legal risk.
So, and we'll get to Senator Bishop here. If the court case is filed at some point in the next 4 or 5 months, and it takes a while to move it forward, but then, like you stated, it gets ratified and solved by the legislature, does the court case become moot automatically, or is, because there was a 3 to 4 month gap, the court case still is valid?
Chair Von Imhoff, I believe what happened in the last case is I don't think the court explicitly said it was moot, and I didn't remember seeing a written decision from the court on why he granted summary judgment, not in the plaintiff's favor, but I do know that that was an issue that was raised, and it seemed to appear that the court did accept that argument, but I don't know that for sure. I tried to find the actual written decision of the Superior Court on summary judgment, and I just didn't find one out there. I know he issued an oral ruling, but that definitely was an argument that was made by the defendants of the case that said the legislature has ratified this. This is moot, and ultimately the court granted summary judgment against the plaintiff. So I think there's a high chance that if the legislature ratified it, that a court would – it is highly likely that the court would find that resolved the issue, in my opinion.
Okay, thank you. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Ms. Harbour, are you still on the line?
I am, Senator.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Paloma, say, hypothetically, if this was approved today, when do you anticipate the money going out the door?
The Department of Commerce has indicated that we will get the money out this month.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Foster?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to get the funds out sooner rather than later. I think folks are in need of that. You know, it's been mentioned that we could possibly do a supplemental in January. However, at the rate that House is going to close the nation, it may not be till February or later. So I'd say that we could get our funds out sooner rather than later.
Thank you. So we have folks on the line, and someone, I forgot who it was. Could you speak up and ask your question?
This is Representative Tuck.
Yes, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the decision that was made with the Superior Court regarding the earlier RPLs was the latest, wasn't really a decision. I know the judge was looking for some sort of legislative action. I guess the question that would probably still be challenged and would have been challenged had we not been in a pandemic and in a panic is whether or not ratifying was the proper legislative action. Because in RPL, we are the appropriating body, the full legislature. The big question comes with LBNA's authority over all other members of the legislature when it comes to appropriations. And we're referring to the last court case, but there's been other previous court cases against this issue with the LBNA. I think one of them dates back to Cooper. And that one there is whether or not you can, by constitution, give away this much authority of the full legislature to a single committee. And when you have the full legislature voting on an appropriations bill, limiting to any of these type of additional funds to $10 million, I think that skirting around that or fudging around that or masking around that is going to bring up a constitutional lawsuit. Now, I've heard someone say that, you know, the legislature breaks its own statutes all the time. Well, that's fine in breaking statutes, but when it comes to the Constitution, that's a more serious matter. We'll never get sued or successfully sued on breaking statutes, but we will get successfully sued on constitutional issues. So I think that there is a high risk level on this, and I think the proper thing to do would be to go ahead and do a supplemental budget. It's very obvious that everyone's trying to get around that $10 million limit, and there's still the question on whether or not the legislature can just go ahead and throw these monies into one department or another department where there is no federal receipts already. That's one of the factors that must be determined, whether or not we can receive additional funds. And that question, I think, was answered in a previous decision or suggested that we follow a process, and right now we're breaking that process. I guess one of the questions I have, just to verify, make sure for Ms. Marks is can a legislator offer an amendment, or can the committee offer an amendment to an RPL?
Thank you. So, Ms. Marks, I think the first question is can a committee member offer an amendment to the RPL at this juncture?
Again, for the record, this is Marie Marks with Legislative Legal Services. Through the chair, Representative Tuck, as you know, the legislature remains the appropriating body, and the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee is an interim oversight committee, and they have authority over what we're talking about here is 370708OH, which is our RPL process. And under that process, the governor can submit an RPL, and the LBNA has power to review and approve it. And that's the power. And if they don't approve it, the governor has to wait 45 days before the governor can proceed with expending the money. That's the LBNA's oversight committee. So they don't have the power to take action that is an action that the legislature can take. Only the legislature can approve money or not approve money, or appropriate money or not appropriate money. The LBNA is oversight. They can review, and they can either approve or not approve.
So thank you. The question that
can you give us a simple answer?
The LBNA cannot approve it.
they cannot approve enough. I guess the answer is, if you're asking them to amend it, what you're saying is we're not approving the RPL. You cannot force, the LDNA doesn't have the power to force the governor to submit anything in particular. Their power is limited to approving or not approving. So if LDNA is asking for an amendment, that essentially is them not approving the RPL. And I think then it would be up to the governor whether to move forward or not. There's no amendment provision.
One follow-up question.
One follow-up question, you bet.
Okay, and from what I heard is that no member of the committee can offer an amendment. And this is regards to the previous $10 million. Is there any money left over in the previous $10 million that was approved at the last meeting, or is there still funds that need to be distributed?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, is that a question for me, or is that a question for Alexis Painter? I guess I'm not quite understanding the question.
Either Lexi or Palombi, whomever, can answer the question.
Yes, Paloma Harbor, can you please put yourself on the record and answer the question?
Yes, again, for the record, Paloma Harbor with the Office of Management and Budget. Through the chair, the funding has been, original $10 million RPL funding has been distributed to the seafood processors.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The question that I have now for Ms. Harbor, please stay on the line, is Ms. Marks indicated that if the legislature fails to act, the governor and the executive office has 45 days by which to act. The question that I have for you, Ms. Harbor, is if this committee fails to act on these two RPLs, what is the intention of the OMB department to respond to these RPLs? Are you going to go ahead and pay them within 45 days anyway?
Thank you, Chair Von Imhoff, again, Paloma Harbor with OMB. So it says that should LBNA recommend within the 45-day period that the state not initiate the additional activity, the governor shall again review the revised program, and if the governor determines to authorize the expenditures, the governor shall provide LBNA with a statement of the governor's reasons before commencement of expenditures. And if you take no action and 45 days elapses, then we can start incurring expenditures. But I cannot speak for the governor. I don't know for sure. I think it depends on the action taken. If the committee says, no, we strongly believe this is a workaround to our appropriation language and we feel that it is illegal, then I think, again, with the legislature being the appropriators, we would have to stick with that decision. But I don't, I shouldn't speculate. But at the very least, it would delay the distribution.
Okay, so basically the governor can choose, the executive office can choose sometime around the end of January to dispense these funds per statute, I believe what Ms. Marks was describing.
That is correct. I'm sorry. It is in the statute.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
Madam Chair, Tandy Josephson at the appropriate.
Yes, Representative Josephson.
Well, I guess through the chair, my question is for Ms. Mark. Ms. Harbor, and I understand she doesn't work for the AG in that capacity, although she might advise him. But she, and I don't mean this. I like Ms. Harbor very much, but she first indicated that if we fail to appropriate it, they may simply abide by that and move through the normal budgetary process for inclusion of the dollars. But then there was some indication just now that, no, maybe they would move ahead with it anyway. And this sort of gets to the core of my concern. So one of my concerns, and Representative Tuck explained it, I think, very well. But one of them is with cynicism. So the public is frustrated that, you know, there was a threat to ignore the PLMD law and we've ignored the statutory formula on the dividend. And now we would be ignoring this own law that we just wrote half a year ago. And so the public at some point has earned its stripes, is my concern, and has sort of a right to be sort of cynical.
and we have to be aware of that. But then the other question would be, it sounds to me like our council is saying, if the governor were to move forward after 45 days and we were to sit passively, certainly our council would watch us do that, but it's not guarding our sort of jurisdictional prerogative very well. And so my concerns are sort of where they were on November 2nd. They really haven't moved a great deal. And I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
And I'd also like to make a comment. And who is this? Do I have a floor? Yes. Is this Senator Reinbold? Yes, it is. Yes. Please state yourself for the record and make your comment. Thank you. Okay. This is Senator Reinbold. And first, I'd like to make a comment on something that Representative Tuck, and then make a comment. You know, he may want to clarify. I'm not sure. And then I would also like to make a statement on this process. So first of all, Tuck said that we can't successfully be sued for breaking laws. And I actually want to echo Andy's comments that the people are frustrated. We as lawmakers need to follow the law as written with integrity until they are changed. And just because there's been one ruling in court in regards to this that is controversial regarding the PSD does not mean, you know, that's a blanket final ruling. And I definitely do believe that the legislature could be sued and successfully in the future. But, you know, that's my stance. Todd can have his own or clarify. But I also wanted to say that you have raised enough serious issues, especially legislative finance, that I am uncomfortable moving forward with a yes vote on this today. Thank you, Chair Von Imhoff. Thank you. I would like to state for the record that Senator Marchicki is on the line. Thank you. And if Hannah Lager, if you could state your name for the record, and the question that I'm hoping you can answer is, let us know the date when these grant awards of the $20 million expires.
Absolutely. Thank you. For the record, this is Hannah Lager, Acting Administrative Services Director for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. The current federal program goes through January 24th, 2024, is your question.
So we have about a year to deal with this. So, committee members, both president on the phone, I think the facts are we have $20 million in two different RPLs. We're trying to do a workaround of the $10 million cap that was put into the budget. This is the same RPL that we've seen a year ago that this committee approved in its form of $30 million to the same recipients of the fish processors due to technical issues or clarification for guidance for the money. It was delayed. It's now being presented again. Nothing has changed other than this $10 million cap in the most recent round of budgets. The recipients are the ones that are losing in having a delay of the money. The option is to pass this, have the money get out before year end. The fish processors receive the money, they can utilize it, and then the entire legislature convenes, and at some point between the middle of January and the 121st day, can put ratifying language in the 2024 budget to bless what we're doing today. It's a little bit of a risk. We are going against a statute, and we are just merely seven or eight people versus the entire legislature. The alternative is to not pass it. According to Ms. Lager, we have an entire year to do so. This $20 million can be picked up in line items in the budget sometime between now and the 121st day. We are definitely crossing our T's and dotting our I's. The losers are the fish processors. They get to have the money 5 months late, or at this point, a year and a half late.
Your line is unmuted.
Well, Senator Sedman.
I again, you know, I'm ready to make the motion whenever the committee is, but I think we should move this forward. I recognize that there's risks, but we're also going to be in session here in a month, and we could bless that if we have to, as the legislature. But to hold the fish processor basically hostage for bureaucratic inaction for over a year is a little tough. I think we should move this forward, and when we look at the budget this upcoming year, take a look at that gap we have in the House budget and not replicate it.
Is there anyone else in the room that wants to speak? Representative Sponholz.
So I think the issues have been fleshed out pretty well today. I think that it is true that we approved this last December. The challenge is that between now and then, we passed legislation which prohibited the action that's being, you know, that was proposed at the last meeting, and that we're trying to find a workaround to here. The remedy that's been discussed today is to ratify or appropriate the funds legally in compliance with the operating budget. And I think as much as I'd like to get these funds out, there's a right and a wrong way to do things. And, you know, it's likely that the committee is going to go a different way than I am, but there's always a right and a wrong way to do things. And I need to make sure that I'm voting based on principle and not based on expediency, and so I'm going to have to not support this.
Okay, so we have some folks online. If folks would like to speak now, we will be bringing this to a motion, and if there is an objection, then everyone will have an opportunity to speak to the objection, or you can speak now if you wish. So I see Representative Ortiz, Senator Keel, Senator Reinbold, Representative Tuck, Representative Josephson, and Senator Majicki. Is there anybody who would like to comment? Okay. So, Senator Stedman.
I'll do one motion at a time. I think it would be best, Madam Chairman. Is that what you'd like, if you like them both?
I think so. Go ahead and do them both.
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the following RPLs. RPL number 08-2023-0175, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Commissioner's Office, USDA Seafood Processors Pandemic Response and Safety, $10 million federal operating receipts. RPL number 08-2023-0194, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Division of Investments, USDA Seafood Processors Pandemic Response and Safety, $10 million federal operating receipts. That is the motion.
Thank you. Is there any objection to moving the RPL?
This is Senator Reinbold. I object.
So we have an objection from two folks here. So, Senator Reinbold, would you like to speak to your objection?
I believe I already have. The issues that Alexi Painter has pointed out are of critical concern to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sponholz. No. Okay. There is an objection. Would you care to, so you haven't spoken to your objection. Madam Secretary, we're going to call
Madam Chair, I'd like to speak as well, Representative Tuck.
I apologize. Yes, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really implore people to look at previous decisions regarding this committee, because it's clear that this committee does not have that much authority over the full legislature, especially when it comes to appropriations. That is laid into the full legislature. In a proper appropriations bill, anyone can offer an amendment. And what has happened in the past, and with the legal challenges most recently, the argument was that well, the remedy was ratifying, but even during ratification, a single member cannot offer an amendment. So I would still argue that if this case would have gone to the Supreme Court, that it would have ruled against the legislature due to the fact that it's not a true appropriations. And if it were a true appropriation, this body has no authority over that. Basically, once the legislature sets up a program, and then the legislature defines how that program is going to be funded, and then once that appropriation is passed, then LBDA has the authority to receive additional programs from that funding source to that program. And the fact that in the past we have erred in our ways does not make it this immediate decision in front of us a policy decision. It's not a policy decision. It's a constitutional issue. If it was such easy as a policy issue, it would be a problem. But there was a specific limitation put into our appropriations bill this last year, specifically $10 million. And we've all used the term workaround. We're trying to fudge the process. We're worried about risks and knowing that we may be doing something wrong. I think it's clear that we are doing something wrong. In a way, I wish that we would have failed these two RPLs in our last meeting, because then the governor could have taken action, you know, very shortly, because he has 45 days to act. If the governor doesn't, if this motion fails and the governor decides not to act, it's very clear that we are the ones that are providing cover for the governor. I know if I was the governor, I'd probably do the same thing. If I was trying to fudge something, I would put it on the legislature's lap to try to fudge it for me. But I think it's wrong that the governor wouldn't take this up after 45 days if he truly believes that these RPLs are as pure as we're trying to convince us. So at this time, and for those reasons, I will not be supporting this motion.
Thank you, Representative Touch. I think everyone today has brought up some good points. I think for me, what makes this a very unique case and unique situation is that we voted on this a year ago already. It's just, it's a whole different issue than if it was a brand new RPL in my mind. And that's why I feel comfortable voting for it today. But is there anyone else on the committee that wishes to make a comment before roll call? Okay, hearing none. We do not need the alternates today. We do have everybody here, so if you'd like to begin, Shannon will call the roll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Sponholz?
No.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Kaufman? Is Representative Kaufman present?
No. Not yet.
Representative Tuck?
No.
Senator Reinbold?
No.
Senator Machicki? Senator Machicki? Not present. Senator Stedman?
Yes.
Chair Von Imhoff?
Yes.
Three yay, four nay.
So three yays, four nays, the motion fails to pass. Okay. Thank you. So our next order of business is the discussion of two procurement items. First is a request from the Division of Legislative Audit to purchase a new printer. And a memo related to this request has been distributed to committee members, and Legislative Auditor Chris Curtis is here to present the request.
because people can put their phones on mute. It'd be wonderful. Thank you. For the record, this is Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. Thank you for the opportunity to request the purchase of a new printer. Ours was a current printer, scanner, fax machine, copier, was purchased in 2012. It's now going to be a year past its useful life, and Xerox will no longer be maintaining the equipment. So we're asking for approval, using those pre-negotiated state contracts. We're asking for approval to purchase another machine for not to exceed $58,000. Is there any discussion on a new printer? Nope. Okay. Senator Stedman, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee authorize the purchase of a new printer for the Division of Legislative Audit for the purchase price not to exceed $58,000.
Is there any objection to approving the purchase of a new printer? Seeing none, this procurement is approved. Okay, so our next order of business is to go into executive session to consider the final audit reports for the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives, SUNCET, and the special audit of the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights. The committee will also consider a confidential procurement matter and the status of audit resources. So, Senator Stedman, can you make a motion to move us into executive session?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee go into executive session under Uniform Rule 22B3 for the discussion of matters that may, by law, be required to be confidential. I ask that the following persons remain in the room or online: the legislative auditor and necessary staff for the auditor, any legislators not on the committee, staff or legislators who are members of the committee, and House Finance staff in Juneau for access to their office.
Is there any objection to the executive committee motion? Seeing or hearing none, we will go into executive committee after a brief at ease to clear the room, and we are at ease.
Your line is unmuted.
You get to be, I think, good job. Okay, we're back on the record. It is 2:39 p.m. Members present are Senator Stedman, Representative Foster, Representative Ponholt, myself, Senator, Von Imhoff. We have Senator Keel on the line, Senator Reinbold, Representative Tuck, Representative Gilson, and Senator Machicki. So we appreciate everyone sticking with us here. So during the executive session, we discussed confidential matters relating to audit, as well as the status of audit resources and details for confidential procurement. We're going to start off with making a motion for our audit. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the following audits be released as final audit reports: Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives, SUNCET, Office of the Governor, Alaska State Commission on Human Rights, Special Audit.
Thank you. Is there any objection on these two audits? Seeing and hearing none, the final audits are approved for release. So, Ms. Curtis, would you please discuss the procurement of federal compliance audit assistance, please? Certainly. For the record, this is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. So at the August 22, 2022 meeting, the Legislative Budget Audit Committee approved the solicitation for the audit of five FY23 major federal programs, and that was to help us address the increase in our federal compliance workload. The solicitation is complete, and today I'm asking the committee to approve the award of a contract not to exceed $237 for the audit firm of Clifton, North & Allen.
$237,000. Right? Yes, not to exceed $237,000. Okay. Is there any comments from committee members? Okay. Senator Sedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve a contract not to exceed $237,000 for the compliance audit of five FY23 major federal programs.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Seeing or hearing none, contract is approved. And Ms. Curtis, please remain at the table. Thank you. To provide an update on the legislative audit personnel. Again, for the record, this is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor, and thank you for the opportunity to discuss the audit resources. Over the past 2 years, I have come to the committee to brief you on the status of our resources, and today I'm going to be providing an update. So members have two charts in front of you, and there's copies of the charts at the back counter for the public, and they will be posted as meeting documents after the meeting. The first chart is a snapshot of filled audit positions for the Division of Legislative Audit as of February 1st, 2020. The red slash indicates that an employee has left the division as of December 1st, 2022. Now, there you can see from this chart that there are 17 positions that have left over the span of time. You can also notice when you look at these positions how many years of experience has walked out the door since that period. I also want to draw your attention to the black X next to the position. This indicates that those positions have left the state. So there's 12 of the 17 actually moved out of the state of Alaska. What you do not see on this chart is that since February 1st, I have hired five employees that also left before December 1st, 2022. So in total, there was 22 audit staff during this time period. And that should be shocking to folks because you have to wonder how could we possibly get the work done with this type of turnover. And that answer to that question would be because we have some very, very experienced senior management. So with that experience and a lot of extra hours, we're able to get our job done. But I want to draw your attention now to the second chart. And that's our staffing as of December 1st, 2022. There is a small table at the bottom left that summarizes the tenure of employees as of December 1st, 2022. You will see that this chart is for our authorized positions. And of our authorized audit positions, we have 10 that are vacant. Now, that is authorized. And that is a bit overstated because four of those are not funded. So we're actually six vacant funded positions. You also notice that we have nine of our positions that have under 2 years experience. So we have a huge number of new auditors. And you also notice from this tenure table that we have a very slim, small middle management right now. And it's critical that those folks, we're able to retain those folks and these new folks that we're hiring because just be very experienced upper positions that you see, two of those can retire right now. And my position can retire in 12 months. So it's really important we try to work on retaining these people in order for us to meet our mission. So today I'm asking for support from committee members for retention incentive payment. And you also have a copy of a draft policy. And there are copies of the policy at the back table, and we will attach it as a meeting document. So the draft policy outlines who would be eligible for such payments. And these were only offered to CPAs that have been working for Legislative Audit for at least 3 years. They are to be paid in July, and they are calculated based on the year's work as of December 31st the prior year. These are for full-time, continuous working for that time span. Again, only CPAs, and they have to have received a performance ranking of expected or above expected in the prior calendar year. The amount of the payments would be calculated based on the years of experience as of December 31st, the prior
multiplied by a percent identified on page 2, and the percents range from 3% to 11%, 3% being for people that have worked at least 3 years and are certified public accountants, and 11% are for those that have been working for continuously for at least 20 years. So we believe we've put a lot of guardrails on this, so they're only applicable to these uniquely specialized positions to encourage retention of critical talent. So the total cost of for FY24, I estimate to be $160,000, and I do have budget available to fund. Now, if these are successful in the future, and I can have full staff and I retain staff, at some point I'll have to come forward and ask for funding. I also want to mention that the policy requires the committee to re-examine the need for the incentive in 5 years.
Any comments from committee members on the phone? Thank you for that explanation.
Madam Chair?
Oh, yes, I apologize.
This is Andy Justice. I'm going to vote wholeheartedly to support this. I'm curious where, if anywhere, would the public be privy to seeing this action? If they're listening to this after we move to a motion, but if they're looking at a budget itself, what document would this show up in?
Through the chair, if they're interested in the policy itself, it'll be attached as a document. And the actual payments themselves will come out of my appropriation and be paid the first full pay period in fiscal year 24, in July. As part of the biweekly payroll.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. Is there any further questions? I'll pause. Okay. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee authorize retention incentives for legislative audit certified public accountants as outlined in the draft policy dated December 14, 2022.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, this motion is approved. Okay, so we are moving on with Section 6, the final item today. Is other committee business. Chris Curtis will briefly update the committee on the top audit findings resolution process. Members should have received a spreadsheet or grid with blue and white color update with each of the top findings. For the record, this is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. So this grid that the chair mentioned, it summarizes the status of corrective actions, and this is a refresher at the last meeting. The committee formally adopted the audit finding follow-up process, made it part of your uniform rules, incorporated into your handbook. They also directed me to send letters to these auditees related to these findings and to ask for the current status of their corrective action, and that's what this grid does, to summarize their response. So the final stage of the committee's follow-up process is to determine which of these findings we might want to forward to future legislative committees for additional follow-up and consideration. So that last column on the grid is the recommended action. And I recommend forwarding the findings noted in grid as priorities 2 and 4 to the applicable finance subcommittee for consideration during the subcommittee finance hearing. And I recommend forwarding priority number 7 to the Labor and Commerce Committees for their consideration. This is the recommendation. This is item 2 on that. That's the recommendation to automate their license process. So they have responded that they've procured a new licensing database. So we'll be informing the Labor and Commerce Committees that is in progress and give them the opportunity to hold a hearing on the status of that new database. And then I recommend forwarding priority number 8 to the Standing Committee for Health and Social Services.
This is in regards to the prescription drug monitoring program. The executive branch reports that they have contracted for a study on that program, and that report will be ready by the end of December 2022. So we'd like to inform the Health and Social Service Committee of the existence of that report and give them the opportunity to hold a hearing to talk about the results. So I'm opening it for any comments or questions. I do want to mention that there is no formal action required by the committee, since the committee adopted this process as part of the handbook. Senator Lex Hoffman and I have met on these, and we've collaboratively identified these items for potential follow-up. And as you know, he's been a leader in this audit finding follow-up process. So these recommended actions were developed collaboratively with him. And if you have questions, he does have a date here in Tennis today. If you have questions about the process. But at this point, if there's no comments or questions, the plan is to continue to work with Senator Lex Hoffman in identifying just logistically the wording of the letters and maybe an education process to inform the future committees of this new process and what the expectations are for future follow-up. You know, that's a lot. But is there any questions or comments about this process?
Thank you very much, though, for recommending potentially like which committees could potentially see this both in the subcommittees, maybe even in the higher committees for hearings. And I see, for example, we have Senator Wilson on the phone, who I believe is the chairperson for the Health and Social Services Committee. So I think he might be interested in perhaps priority number 8. You have the drug enforcement prescription pharmacy control. So thank you for that. Senator Wilson, thank you for being online, and I apologize that I've not called you out earlier. Did you want to make a comment on that at all? And I know I'm putting you on the spot. I apologize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No comment at this time. Just looking forward to reading the full audit and would love to work with Ms. Caruso and see how we can help.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the room here or anybody online that would like to have a question or make a comment on these top 8 audit findings?
This is Senator Reinbold.
Yes, Senator Reinbold.
Chair Von Imhoff, thanks for the opportunity. And I just want to say once again, I am impressed with Chris Curtis's and her team's work very much. And I just appreciate the fact that we have somebody that has been with us so long and has worked under such long hours to help us prioritize and see where our focus needs to be. Because, as you know, we have to go through a lot of information. So I know it's not in the form of a question, but I'm not sure if this is our last meeting or not, and I really want to show great appreciation to you. First of all, I think we've had a lot of very interesting topics about legislative budget and audit, and also to Chris for the past 10 years, me watching her incredible work.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold.
I love this process. This has been something that's kind of spurred me for a few years, the fact that we have finding and then that there's not a feedback loop. I would just add to the priority 3 Medicaid eligibility determinations. I think that's how we need to be presented to the Health Finance Committee so that they can be have a conversation with the Department of Health about what it is that they need to improve eligibility determinations.
Thank you. I think perhaps the finance co-chairs in both bodies could take a look at this and talk with their committee members about and their caucuses about subcommittees as well as higher committees and what might be appropriate to do a hearing. But thank you. Anybody else on the phone? No? Okay. Well, in the event this is my last meeting, I do want to say it has been an honor to chair this committee. It has been challenging, to say the least, at times, but also deeply rewarding to work with such a fine group of people. You are, and Ms. Curtis, incredibly professional, incredibly knowledgeable, very thorough. You are very good at your craft, so I commend you. Well done with thinking of these retention incentives. I think it's so
facility needed accountants are in short supply, and half CPA will travel, and we're seeing that happening right now. So it's been a good 2 years on this committee. Well, actually, I've been on this committee all 6 years. 6 years as a senator, it is a little bittersweet, but I appreciate and thank you, everyone, and thank you for being here today. So is there anything else? Is that of the order? I hope I don't see you next month. Okay, thank you, and we are gone at 2:56. Done.